When we speak about Pesach, let's see how many things you guys remember happened at the Seder. So go ahead, Jeffrey. How many things can you think of that you know of going at Pesach night? Jake, you want to help him out? What happens Pesach night? Let's see. We know we eat matzah. We know we drink wine. We know we talk a lot. We also eat bitter. We read the Haggadah. We dip. Okay. Now, how much of that do we understand? Guys. Zilch? No, seriously. I want to know where to begin. This is the first time we're meeting. So...
Not a lot.
Not a lot. Okay. Let's take a step back. What about the story of the Exodus from Egypt? That you guys know?
Yeah. Pretty cool.
Okay. So, on the story, I'm willing to bet there's a lot we could cover that would be interesting that you probably never heard before. But we'll do the basic outline, and then we'll zone into the mitzvot. Okay. So... our story begins a few thousand years before creation, when God wanted to create a world. And in order to create a world, God said there has to be people that will lead the world forward. Meaning God wants his emissaries here. God has angels in heavens, but he needs the people down below. And so these people, it is pre-decreed, are going to have patriarchs. Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. And for whatever reason, God decrees that the Jewish people have to begin from below. And so we begin from below, we begin on Bottom, where Avram's father is a major pagan. Avram, the first of the patriarchs, Abraham, his father, Terach, sells idols. He's a major believer. He believes so much in these idols that when his son Avram challenges the faith, he gives him over to Nimrod to be executed. He is very faithful to his idols, Terach. And that is the environment Avram grows up in. Now, Avram is recognized as a child prodigy. He's a genius. Everyone sees this kid has a future. Some kids at the age of one, they're talking, you see, hey, wait a second, what's going on here? The kid's already reading at the age 1.5. You see, something unusual. Avram Avinu, at the age of 3, is talking philosophy, and everyone knew this kid is, this is something unusual. We haven't seen something like this before. So Avram is one of probably the first recorded genius in the world. Avram comes from a home of idol worshippers. Now, why is this important for the Seder? One of the themes of the Seder are Matchil Bignut Umsayem Meshevach. We begin with our shameful past. And then we evolve to the praise. And that's why there's this dual nature to the Seder. On the one hand, there are the things that we do that symbolize our shameful past, and then there are the other things that signify, that symbolize our great present and the Exodus and the salvation and being God's chosen people. But there's this duality at the Seder night. And we record our history starting from our pagan forefather, Terach. He's not one of the patriarchs, but he's the father of the first patriarch. And we don't forget that. We remember where we begin. And in a sense, the Seder is about hope. It's about the potential of every Jew. It's about the fact that we didn't start off where we are today. And every one of us has to take that to heart. The Seder night is a night in which every Jew gets a shot in the arm and he's told, look at where you can get to. Because it all started with a pagan who was such a believer in paganism that when his son rejected it, he gave him over to execution. Terach gives Avram over to be killed by Nimrod. You guys know the story, right? Yeah, Terach leaves Avram in charge of the shop. Avram bashes up all the idols. You know the story. Yeah? No. Okay, Terach comes home. He says, what happened? Avram puts the bat in the hand of the big idol. He said they brought a basket of fruits. He got all upset. The other idols wanted it. He beat them all up. Terach says, that's nonsense. Avram says, then why do you bow to them? And Terach takes Avram to Nimrod and says, we got to deal with him. And Nimrod tells him, okay, son, you got to bow to an idol. What do you want to bow to? So Avram says, no. Nimrod says, bow to me. Avram says, you're burnt by fire. He says, bow to fire. Fire is extinguished with water. Bow to the water. Water's carried by clouds, bow to the clouds. Clouds are moved by wind, bow to the wind. Man could stand up to the wind, bow to man. But we did that already. Man is burnt by fire. Okay, he gives him a choice to bow. He doesn't agree to bow, so Nimrod puts him in jail for 4 years to try and break him. And in that jail, during those 4 years, he sees no daylight. And he knows that at the end of the 4 years, they're going to take him to bright sunlight, which in those days was known that if you left someone in complete darkness for 4 years and exposed them to daylight, they would go blind. And Abraham knows that at the end of the 4 years, they're going to do that to him. And during those 4 years, they keep tormenting him. Are you going to give in? And Abraham doesn't. Quite the contrary. Abraham composes a philosophical work with 400 chapters explaining why monotheism is right. They're in prison without any light. And at the end of 4 years, they take him out to broad daylight. Now, for 4 years, Avram thought he was going to go blind at the end of those 4 years. And a miracle happens. He doesn't. But no one promised him that miracle would happen. He didn't. He had no guarantee. He spent 4 years of torture. 4 years knowing that at the end of the 4 years, he's going to be blind in total darkness. And then they put him in jail for another 3 years. And when he wouldn't give in after all of that, they told him, you have a choice. Either give in or we're throwing you into a burning furnace. And the furnace was so hot they couldn't even walk near it. They made a seesaw. They put him on a rock, a slab of rock, and two huge guards threw him into the furnace, and he walked out alive. And that was a miracle. That was the great miracle of Ur Kasdim, the fires of the Chaldeans. Avram walked out alive. And then we know Avram's path. Avram already believed in monotheism before all of that. But okay, we went on a tangent. So we have Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and then the Jews descend to Egypt. So far, you guys know all this, right? Okay, so the Jews go down to Egypt, and in Egypt, the Jews are faithful to God or not? No, Jews become pagans. And how many years are the Jews in Egypt? Huh? How many years? So God tells Abraham they're going to be there for 400 years, but they end up being there for 210 years. For 210 years. Now, who's the first prophet God sends the Jewish people in Egypt?
Moshe.
His big brother Aaron. And Aaron tells them, don't worry, most people don't know that. Aaron tells them, stop serving idols. God wants to take you out of Egypt. And they refuse. And God says, okay, so I'll kill them. And there it was supposed to end. And then God says, but I promise. I promise the forefathers. And so God decides he's going to keep his promise, even though we didn't keep our end of the deal. Out of God's extra kindness, he comes like someone who's in a relationship, and he finds out his mate cheated on him. And she's been cheating on him all along. And then he says, you know, I should divorce you, but I won't. I promised. And so I don't have to keep my promise because you really didn't keep your end of the deal. And God takes us out of Egypt with all the great miracles. Now, let me ask you, what are the most basic principles of Judaism? Okay, so we begin with that there is one God. Okay, that's point number one. What else?
Torah.
I want philosophical concepts. Give me the basic concepts of Judaism.
Don't do to others what you don't want done to yourself.
That's a good detail. It's a very encompassing detail. But I want concepts that really everything else is based on them. So we said God is concept number one. Does God have anything to do with this world? Well, if Judaism, if you said Torah and you say don't do unto others what you don't want done unto yourself, then obviously if God is making demands on us, then he's connected to the world. He knows what's going on here. Right? So concept number two would be that God's involved. God knows what's going on. You know, not like the clock theory. You know the clock theory? The clockmaker makes a clock. Does he have to stick around when the clockmaker dies? Does the clock stop working? No. So there were philosophers who said God created a world, and who says he has anything to do with it now? You know, just like a clockmaker. The clock keeps ticking without him. God made a world, and the world keeps ticking without him. Who says he's alive, right? So Judaism says no. Another basic concept is that God is around and ticking. He is keeping the world ticking. Okay, so one God, keeping the world ticking. He knows what's going on here. What does Judaism say? What happens if you do good things and bad things? There's going to be payback, right? God's involved in the world. This concept of payback, what do we call it in Hebrew? You guys know? Sachar ve'onesh. Okay, so we just discussed basic concepts. Let's take basic concept number 5, and that is that God connects to the world through prophets, right? We have a Torah. We say God gave that to us through a prophet. God talks to human beings. So we just discussed 5 basic concepts. Now, prove to me from the story of the Exodus from Egypt that these 5 basic concepts are part of Judaism. Where do we see these concepts in the Exodus? Go ahead. Daniel, help us out.
We see God's involvement when the miracles.
Okay, so in that, let's see, which concepts do we see in the miracles of Egypt? But what concepts? What does that illustrate?
God being involved in the
world. God's connected to the world. Okay, what else? Richard, let's hear from you. What else do we see from the Exodus from Egypt?
What were the other ones?
We said good people are going to get good, bad people get bad. God speaks to his prophets. God connects to the world.
The bad people got bad.
Oh.
The Egyptians ran off us and they drowned.
So the Egyptians had 10 plagues and they drowned. What else? And the concept of prophecy. Jake, help us out.
Say, prophet was Moshe.
Oh, so we have Moshe. So you see that encapsulated in the whole story of leaving from Egypt, the Exodus, you have the most basic concept of Judaism. The basic principles of Judaism are there. Now, why is that important? Tell me, how many seders have you guys attended in your life? Who runs the seder? Mayu? Who runs the seder? Jeffrey? Everyone just took?
Yeah.
Okay, and by you, Jake?
Yes, I'm.
Richard? Daniel, same thing? Okay, so the way that the Torah tells us to do it, when the Torah describes the Seder, so the Torah says, V'higadito levincha, recount to your son what happened in Egypt. When I was a kid, so we'd have a lot of philosophical discussions, my friends and I. And at some point, I said to them, you know, if this whole Torah is true, then why don't we have a period where father tells the son, son, this is what my father told me, that his father told him, that his father told him, going back to Sinai. Why don't we do that? That would be an easy way of validating it, right? So it bothered me. And after a few days, I realized that's what's supposed to happen on the Seder night. What we're doing on the Seder night is we're telling our kids, listen here, from the day we left Egypt, we've been doing this. The people who left Egypt did it with their sons, and they did it with their sons. And I'm telling you, my father told me that his father told him going back to Egypt. Meaning we're taking one night a year where we're telling our kids all of Judaism. You want to know about Judaism? Here's, on this night, for the last few millennium, we've been sitting, every generation tells the next one, this is what's going on. So when you guys run a Seder, it's not supposed to be everyone told. You guys are supposed to tell your kids. Kids, hey, this is what it's all about. So what biblical mitzvot do we have on the Seder night? So we just described one. Richard, what is that one? That is the mitzvah of recounting, telling our kids. So that's mitzvah number one. It's a biblical mitzvah. The Agada helps us. It gives us a framework. But we also have to talk in a language that people understand. Meaning the Agada is good, but we got to talk a language, maybe do the Agada in English. What else? What other biblical mitzvot? What do we eat on the Seder night? Matzah. Okay, who wants to explain what's a matzah all about?
The bread in their time to rise, and that's just in the
rush. Oh, so here you see a point. You guys are both right. You see, we're eating matzah. How many centuries have we been eating matzah? Let's say about 25 centuries now. 2.5 millennium since we left Egypt. How many years ago did we leave Egypt? We left Egypt in the year 2448 on the Jewish calendar. Right now we're in 5770, right? So 5770 minus 2448. Guys, how many years ago did we leave Egypt? About 3,300 years ago, right? About 33 centuries ago. Yeah? Just so we have a picture, what are we doing here tonight? Yeah? Okay. So we just said Magid, recounting. Matzah, eating the matzah. What else do we eat that's special on Seder night? Maror. Why do we eat the maror? What does maror mean in Hebrew? Oh, bitter, right. So why do we eat the maror?
To call the bitterness
of Egypt. Okay, so tell me, what bitterness was there in Egypt?
Slavery.
Yeah, explain, I'm listening. So we were slaves, like the Negroes were slaves, yeah? Yeah, that's the idea.
So bitter about it.
That's the idea. Richard, give us some more insights. Okay, so let's go backwards a little bit. How did the Jews end up in Egypt? How did we ever get there? How did we get there?
Famine and the apron.
So there was a famine in Canaan, and Yaakov went down with his sons, and they came down as aristocracy. They came down as nobles, right? Now, how did they end up as slaves? How'd they end up as slaves?
Because the Pharaoh afterwards was like, too many Jews.
The Egyptians viewed them as a threat. They said they're a demographic threat. So we have to make a caste system and slowly put them down into slavery. Really, there's no difference. We were aristocracy when we came into Egypt. Now, when they enslaved us, they saw God blessed us, that we had more and more kids. I mean, figure in 210 years, we went from 70 to 2 million. That's 70 to 2 million. You guys understand the numbers? And we didn't intermarry. So we have on tradition that the women had a lot of twins. Women would have six kids at a shot. What's that called? Hextuplets? It's a lot.
Yeah.
Right. It was unusual. Chazal say, we have on tradition that it was a reaction. The Egyptians said, we won't let them expand demographically. God said, oh yeah, I'll show you. And everyone looked the same. I don't know what type of twins they were. Could be, I guess. Six among 2 million isn't... And women gave birth more than once. I mean, so a family is numbered like 30 people. I mean, yeah, figure you have a 30 family kid. I mean, these women were something. You know what it means to carry six kids in the stomach and work and be beaten by the Egyptians? Now, the Egyptians saw this, and the Egyptians started taking Jewish children and throwing them into the cement. So as the Jews are mixing the mortar and the cement, they see their own children wailing, and their blood is being mixed into the cement. This isn't like the blacks working in America. It wasn't that type of slavery. It was slavery with the intent to kill. But they had to look for some kind of reason. So they'd say, if you don't fill the quota, we'll put your babies in instead. And the Egyptians would make women do men's work. And women weren't allowed to work in a kitchen. Women were out working in the field. They did whatever they could to break us, to kill us. And it didn't work. It didn't work. I mean, on the one hand, they broke our spirit, the men. The women's spirit was not broken. On the other hand, we kept thriving. And we grew and we grew and we grew till we numbered 2 million when we left Egypt. Now, the Jews in Egypt felt themselves to be loyal Egyptians. The 10 plagues was a process. How long did it take for the 10 plagues to happen? A year. And during that, the course of that year, part of what was happening was the Jews were understanding that there's a difference between Jew and Egyptian. Until that year, the Jews felt we're all Egyptians, we're lower on the caste system, and they're higher on the system. What happens is, suddenly there's a plague of blood. The Egyptian takes a cup of water, it turns to blood. The Jew takes that same cup, it turns to water. When you have a year where the Egyptians are suffering plagues and the Jews are not, suddenly the Jews start understanding, conceptually, that they're different. So, the forming, the understanding that we're not one of them. And that was something that had to happen. Ever since then, we recount that in the Seder night. We don't celebrate the fact that the Egyptians had to suffer. Even though they heard us, we don't celebrate that. When we recount the 10 plagues, you'll notice we take out a little bit of wine from our cups. You guys know that custom? We're showing that we're not celebrating their pain. We're celebrating our freedom. We're not celebrating their pain. We really, we don't have time, but we should really learn a lot about the story of leaving from Egypt. For tonight, we at least touched on the major concepts. You guys have any questions? You can buy very cheaply good art scroll, Agados. learn the story, understand what happened there. Next Thursday night, I'm going to be having a class in Machon Meir where I teach. I'm going through the Seder. We're going to spend like 5-6 hours doing it. If you guys want to come, you're invited.
What time?
We will probably start at 6:45 and then break for the evening prayer and supper and then continue at 8:30. The truth is I'll be here Thursday. You could come with me. I'm going to be going from here. So find out if it works. You have over here the Machon Meir on the bottom. You have Machon Meir's site.
Oh, cool, thanks.
Is it the website where
and that's the website where you can see the classes.
So how often do you put on the
classes?
Yeah.
Every night.
Yeah.
Our new classes every night. We upload about 100 classes a week.
Oh.
Yeah. So,
so and it stays on the website? Or
yeah, it's all there. No, it stays there. We have over 6,000 classes. There. Go, you'll see. Some of the stuff's high level, some is easy. Or you could email me. You have my email there. You could email me, and I'll tell you which classes are for you. Okay, so now we've covered the Seder. Let's go over to a few mitzvot that we have to be familiar with. We'll have...